As you're doing that, you might look at the handout. As I was reading along with Dr. Swangham, that didn't really make too much sense there. Verse 11 of 1 Corinthians 2, 9 through 11, the first part of it is there before verse 9, and the last part of it is there again at the end of verse 11. I don't know if you noticed that we kind of repeated some words, and it kind of confused the idea. So if you have a pen, and you wanted to, if you want to. But as it is written is where that passage should start, and it should end after that last, but the Spirit of God which is in him. We wouldn't say, we don't repeat even so the things of God. So I don't know how that happened. Some human being must have put this together for us. I know I make mistakes myself, but so I'm not trying to disparage anyone. But I was trying to read it, and it just didn't. I had a hard time. So, all right, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. 2 weeks ago, we began looking at the book of Ecclesiastes and introduced the ideas in the book. And then last week, we looked at the preacher's text. Ecclesiastes is in my Bible, says Ecclesiastes or the preacher. So the preacher has a sermon. His words are given to us here in this book. And his text, we looked at last week, which is basically that there's the things in this world don't satisfy. They're empty. There's something, there must be something good for us to live for, but from the looks of it, nothing is good. Even the things that look good turn out to be not so good. And Ecclesiastes is kind of about looking for meaning. In verse 3 of chapter 1, it says, "What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun?" So we look for something profitable, some true profit, some true gain, and something that would really mean something. And it's empty. And that's what the word vanity means. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. There's without meaning, or it has its emptiness. And then another thing that there's no, in verse 11, there's no remembrance of former things. We look for profit. We look to leave something behind. Influential people talk about their legacy, what they've left behind. Every one of us has in us, we want something of us. We want people to remember what we've done and when we've passed along. And of course, once we've passed along, we don't know what those people think or really want. But right here, we have a desire to work, to labor, and to have something of us be remembered. But Ecclesiastes says, you know, it doesn't happen that way. A lot of people work really hard, and we remember them for a short while, and then we forget about them. Even whole generations, they come and they go. And so what the preacher does then is he goes from that text of seems like everything is empty, and he begins to show where all mankind, he is a representative of mankind, goes to look for meaning. Where do we go to find the things that really mean something, find the things that are lasting? Now, I would point out, he says in verse 2, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." That's interesting, as I was reading about this, that statement there. I mean, if everything is empty, everything is meaningless. Okay, we have, I don't know what the grammatical or the literary term is for it, but we have things that we say that are contradictory in and of themselves, and here's one. This says everything is meaningless, but he really expects us to take some meaning from that statement right there, doesn't he? It's kind of curious and interesting the way he does that. But that statement is not empty, and what he says to us in verse 13 is that emptiness, this emptiness is a gift from God. Let's look at, we're going to be looking at verses 12 to the end of chapter 1 and then the first 11 verses of chapter 2. So in verse 12, it says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail, so he's seeking and searching. Why? Because there's an emptiness. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. God gives mankind this emptiness. He gives it to us to exercise us. And so some people have said, and I think that some people have said, there's a God-sized hole in everybody's heart. There's a hole there. There's an emptiness in everybody's life. And there is. And only God can fill it. We understand that. But so Ecclesiastes is saying, there's this hole. There's this emptiness. And every man is given that emptiness. God gives every man that emptiness because he wants him to seek to fill it. And he knows that only he can fill it, but men seek to fill that emptiness in a multitude of places. And so, and God didn't fill it immediately. He didn't put a hole there and then just fill it. He leaves it empty so that we can see, in my mind, he leaves it there so that every man can see that he can't fill his own need, that only God can fill the need that he has. And so the preacher relates or related how he or men try to fill that hole and where he looked to find the answers. And so he says in verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Now, if we think of geography, and we should, at least once in a while, where is Israel? Where is Jerusalem? It's in the Middle East. But if we think of what everybody would call the known world at the time when this was written, where in the known world was Israel and Jerusalem? Right? Smack dab in the middle. There were civilizations in Europe, there were civilizations in Africa, there were civilizations in Asia, and they did communicate with one another. And in order to communicate with one another, they would have to pass through the Levant, or the land of Palestine, where Israel was, where Jerusalem was. So if anybody of any importance in Egypt would be traveling anywhere else, they very likely would pass through Jerusalem. If anybody of any importance and knowledge was in Europe, and they wanted to go to Egypt or Africa, they would pass through Jerusalem. All Israel, Jerusalem, is in the center of the world. And I point that out because of what the preacher says he did here. He says, I was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and that's the place where, that's the middle of the world. It's the crossroads of the world, commerce. Everything is going to pass through that area. And he says, I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. Now, he's already stated his text, if we would say, and now he begins to say, I sought and seeked out to see if I could answer this question about the emptiness of man through wisdom. Now, I would point out that this is wisdom. Mostly, it seems that this is wisdom and knowledge that's gained by experience. Verse 16, I had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. Okay, so the picture that we get is of a man who he realizes that in his own life, things don't happen the way he thinks they should, which we talked about last week. And so he goes and tries to find out if it's different anywhere else. And he's in the ideal place to do that, isn't he? He's in the center of the world. Anybody that wanted to travel, and you know, if some important person from Africa is traveling, he's going to travel through Jerusalem. And he catches this man who knows much and says, ask him questions. And what does he find out? He finds out the things that he sees around him is the same thing that this man from Africa sees around him. And then somebody from Asia passes through, and he talks to him. And he finds out that the same things that he sees around about his own life, the same emptiness, the same fruitlessness, the same restlessness, wise men see in Asia and Europe. Everyone. He, the picture is with that I can imagine is he even disguises himself. He makes himself not look like a king. He goes out among all the people and he says, okay, I'm going to talk to people in different occupations. Maybe my occupation is empty and there's another occupation that has meaning to it. And he talks to this type of person and then he goes and talks to another type of people in every walk of life. He's gained experience. He's talked to people from all places in the world. He's increased knowledge and wisdom. He's talked to people from every walk of life. Everywhere, though, it is the same. That's what he summarizes. In verse 14, he says, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. And so he says, summarizing, I looked everywhere. Everywhere I went, I looked and saw that it's the same as it is with me. By wisdom and everywhere it's the same. It's empty. And so by wisdom and knowledge, by asking questions, by searching them out, by talking to people, he learned that he thought that perhaps someone in a different occupation or someone in a different place would have found the answer, but no one had found the answer. He found out only in that what in verse 15 says, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. Everywhere you go, it's the same. Okay, that which is wanting, that which is missing cannot be counted. If you don't have something, you can't count it. It's not there. It's worthless. It's fruitless. If something is crooked, you're not going to be able to straighten it out. You can try all you want, but it's not going to be fixed. Everybody comes up with the same conclusion, regardless of what their trade is, what their walk of life is, regardless of where they're from. He says in verse 16, I commune with my own heart, saying, lo, I'm come to great estate and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. So this is experiential, wisdom and knowledge. He gathered all of this, great wisdom, great accumulation of knowledge. And then he says, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and perceived that this also is vexation of spirit. Now, 17 and 18 are parallel. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increases knowledge increaseth sorrow. What he finds is that it's vexation of spirit. Life is empty. Everywhere you look, the more you look, it's all the same. So when he increases knowledge, how does he increase knowledge? He talks to somebody that, you know, we look at that person and say, you know, those people, they have peace, they have fulfillment, but he goes and finds that person, whatever, you know, whoever it is, the professor in college, says they've got a handle on things. And he talks to him and he finds they don't have a handle on things. So he's got more knowledge. And what does he find out? More sorrow, more emptiness. He goes everywhere he goes. He learns more and he finds out that it's the same. So he adds, if he hadn't learned more, he would have thought, well, I have it rough, but at least everybody else is okay. But as he checks out everybody else, he finds they have it rough too, and they're empty too. Everywhere, there's nothing. There's no place you can go. There's no occupation you can have that satisfies and fills that emptiness that is in your life. And so his increase of knowledge, as he gains more knowledge, it just increases his sorrow, increases the emptiness. And so the first place that he points out, the first place that he looked to find, to fill the hole in his life, to fill that emptiness, was in knowledge. and wisdom. So the second place we're going to see in chapter 2, verse 1 through 11. He said in verse 1 of chapter 2, I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. So right there in the first statement, he says what he looked for, and he gives a summary of it. Okay, do you understand that I'm saying summary? Because he didn't look at it and say, this is vanity, and then proceed to check it out. He says, I checked this out, and I found out that it was vanity, and this is how it happened. This is the places that I looked. So he looks in pleasure. Another avenue to try to fill the emptiness in his life. Now, people do this, don't they? In fact, in America, we have a very much pleasure-seeking society. And we're not the first to be that way. And there, you can get pleasure from many different things, and he points that out to us. There are many, many pleasurable activities, and they do give pleasure. But what he says, what he points out, and he says, I looked at all of them, I proved it with, I proved my heart with pleasure, and I found that that was empty too. So there's a hole in our heart that we know only God can fill. But man seeks to fill it by looking to other places, learning about other places, and finds that everyone is empty. And then so man will also try to seek to fill that hole through pleasure. And there are, like I said, there are many things in our lives that do give us pleasure. We're not, this Ecclesiastes is not trying to tell us that not to do pleasurable things because they give you emptiness. There are things that give us pleasure. But what this is going to show us, or what this tells us, is that we can gain pleasure and we enjoy those things, but when they stop, the emptiness that was there before the activity remains. It's still there. When we're done with the pleasurable activity, it's still empty. So, where did he go to look for pleasures? Many things listed here. In verse 2, he says, I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? Jokes, humor, comedy. Some of us like these things more than others. There's some people that just love to tell jokes. There's some people that just love to hear some humorous or see something humorous. There's people here that send little videos of cats doing stupid things to whatever, okay, it makes us laugh. It's like, oh, that's neat. And then you close and say, well, I just wasted a bunch of time looking at that, didn't I? But that was empty. Or, you know, some people, I don't think many Christians would go to this type of a place because of what else is there, but you might go to a place to watch somebody stand up and tell jokes and be a stand-up comedian. And what happens? You know, you laugh, you smile, it's okay, and it's like, wow, all the worries of the present life are kind of in the background, but you leave or you finish or you turn it off, and what happens? It doesn't satisfy. You're still empty. So jokes, humor, comedy, those types of things are pleasurable, but when they end, they're empty. There's still emptiness. Verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. We've talked about the idea of folly, but gave myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. Now, wine, at least in my thinking here, is representative of it. In other places of the Bible, people say, I think it's in Revelation, says I didn't study this, so I'm not going to say it, the specifics. But wine and oil represent people that are rich and have all the food and pleasures that they could think of. And so I'm going to interpret this in that way. How many of you like to get a nice meal? Okay, you look forward to a nice meal. I mean, we like a good food, and all of what your definition of a good food is, we're probably all different, okay? But sometimes people like to just really dress up super special and go to a certain place where they're waited on hand and foot, and they say they got food there, like, wow. You know, almost afraid to eat it because it looks so special. And it costs a lot of money. You saved up a lot of money, and you don't feel bad spending it, you know, once a year or once every 5 years for something really special, okay? But what the preacher says, he had enough, and we see this later on, he had enough to be able to enjoy that as much as he wanted, whenever he wanted. And he didn't enjoy it as a glutton, like maybe the prodigal son in the New Testament. He acquainted his heart with wisdom. He enjoyed it judiciously. He wasn't just whole hog into it. And yet, so he enjoys these very nice things in life, and they can give us pleasure. And if you've enjoyed a nice meal, whether you just whatever you think is the nice meal, we've all enjoyed one. Okay? Do you want another one? What does that prove? It didn't satisfy, did it? It was satisfying while you were enjoying it, but you had to stop. You had to leave the place. You had to go eat, you know, peanut butter and jelly or at McDonald's or whatever. Maybe McDonald's was what you were looking forward to. I don't know. Clubs, whatever. Any, they try to. Marketing is great, isn't it? Okay. What does it prove to us? What does marketing prove to us? There's emptiness. We can want it. We can satisfy that desire, but it doesn't fill. It doesn't fill. So expensive tastes, even used by wisdom, even satisfied in a judicious, wise way, still leave us empty. I made, verse 4, I made me great works. I built me houses. I planted me vineyards. So this as an umbrella category, this is like art, okay? He made great works, houses. Think of the temple. We think of all the great vineyards, he says. Things that are just took a lot of work in order to do, but they were pleasing to the eye. Architecture, landscaping, all of those types of things. Do you enjoy looking at those things? A lot of people do, don't they? There's there's certain gardens. You go to Hyde Park. There's a Hyde Park in, a few years ago, you all sent me and my wife on a trip. We were able to go to Australia. There's a Hyde Park in Sydney. Very beautiful garden with buildings in it and water and trees. There's Hyde Park in London. And I don't know, there's probably Hyde Park all over the place. Any of those types of things that have buildings and vineyards, for that matter, works of art in them, they give us pleasure. It's nice to go to them. But you have to leave, don't you? And even if you could stay, there are some people that stay in those kind of parks. But they probably claim that there's some things missing from their life. There's an emptiness. Right? So, art, architecture, landscaping, nature, verses 5 and 6. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kind of fruits. I made pools of water to water there with the wood that bring forth the trees. So, there's nature all around us. Do we like to see nature? Do we enjoy that? Does it give us pleasure? We have a national park system that kind of proves that, doesn't it? You can go to, we had some friends and that passed through here, and they went and saw the Tetons and the Rockies. They had never, I don't think they'd ever been west of the Mississippi, and they were very pleased with the area around them. They thought they lived in one of the most beautiful places in America. And then they saw the Rockies, and it's like, wow. It's so enjoyable to see these things. But there's still, it's not fulfilling. It's pleasurable, but it's not fulfilling. Possessions and money, verses 7 and 8. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings. So here again we see this idea that kings would have passed through Jerusalem, and the king in Jerusalem would find out that what another king had that was very special from his land, and said, I'm powerful enough, I'm rich enough, I can get that too. So he had the treasures that were peculiar to all places in the world. He had been able to gather them himself. Have you ever met somebody that says, look at this, you've probably never seen something like this before, right? They get joy out of that. They get some pleasure out of that because it's not from the area. I was over here, and I was able to see this, and I brought it back. That's enjoyable. But does it fill? No. The peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. At the end there, verse 8, it talks about music. Does music bring joy and pleasure? Yeah. Some people, so much so that they can't live without it. It's enslaving. But we go to a concert, or we hear certain music, we buy a certain CD. Why do we buy it? Well, we don't buy CDs anymore, do we? We download a file or whatever, we stream a certain, we like, I like that kind of music. I want to listen to that. I'm in the mood for that right now. It's going to please me. And it does please us, but it doesn't fill. It doesn't end up satisfying. So music, possessions and money and music, and then work and accomplishments. But let's, so he kind of speaks back about this. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And I'm not one, as we're looking at this text, I'm not one to say, well, he's lying, because we can look at all this and say he wasn't wise. No, he's telling the truth. This is the God's word. He said, my wisdom remained with me. So he was able to enjoy these things in a wise, judicious way. Many times we don't. Many times we lose control of ourselves. We let those things grab us. But he was able to, in the very first verse of the chapter, says, I will prove thee with mirth. He was testing it. He went and tested these things out, okay, fully. He proved them. He kept his wisdom. And so my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from my, withheld not from my heart any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. So he tested these things out. All the things, everything that people said would give you pleasure, he tested them. He tried them. Even work and accomplishments, all my labor. I looked at all the works that my hands had wrought. Something that gives pleasure to people, doesn't it? Have you ever worked hard at something and then there, it was done? Okay? And it's like, wow, I really feel good about myself now, right? We get pleasure from working, from accomplishing something. We get pleasure from those accomplishments giving pleasure to other people. But in the end, they don't fill. See, then I looked at all the works my hands had wrought and on the labor, verse 11, that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. So pleasure, wisdom and pleasure, we can look into both of these areas, knowledge, wisdom, learning, having pleasure, and these things, knowing is not bad, but it doesn't fill. Doing pleasurable activities is not bad, but it doesn't fill. All these things end up with the same result of emptiness. I just would like to close by just pointing out, and it's time to close, John 14:7. I turned the wrong way. Jesus says, if you had known me, you should have known my Father also, and from henceforth you know him and have seen him. You know, it's not earthly knowledge, it's not worldly knowledge that fills, it's knowing God that does. And I'm reminded again, I'm pretty sure I pointed this passage out last week, but I'm reminded again of what Jesus said, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Learn of me. God, Jesus Christ, he's a teacher. When we learn from him, we are satisfied, we are filled. That hole in our heart is filled completely and perfectly. And so I mention these things because we're going to take several weeks to look at the book. The preacher will get there at the end, but we're not at the end yet. So hopefully this was helpful to us this morning. Let's pray.